Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome to episode 153 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am super pumped to have our guest with us today. He is a fellow content creator, but before we dive into his interview and what he has to say and share about Magic, I do want to say thank you so much to the patrons. It means so much to me that you are supporting the show directly. Specifically, I want to give a shout out to Timothy, who is the newest patron. Thank you so much for supporting the show. I love doing this podcast and I really appreciate the support so I can keep the lights on and keep this thing going. Here we are in December. This is the first episode that's coming out in December, which means it's time for another patron-exclusive giveaway. So next week, I will be picking a patron to win the giveaway for November and announcing that on the podcast. If you want to throw your hat in the ring for future giveaways, then feel free to go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon to learn more about that and then sign up there. We've had a lot of fun here in the Magic community with a Grand Prix last weekend and two Grand Prix this weekend, Denver and Madrid. They both start today, so I'm really excited to see what the players in the world are doing, because then we go into kind of a lull. We have a bit of a break with one more Grand Prix in the States, and then that pretty much wraps it up for the year. The next thing on the horizon is the release of Aether Revolt, and then all the Grand Prix leading up to the Pro Tour coming in February. So a lot of fun Magic events to watch and to cheer on past guests as well as listeners to the show. I hope that anyone who's going to these Grand Prix or having a good time, making sure that you're taking snacks and water and your cards and all the good stuff that we talk about here. I've been having a blast interviewing the competitors of the World Magic Cup. It's been so fun to talk to people from Australia and Belgium and Finland and just bringing in a global perspective. So stay tuned to the podcast. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the show on whatever device you use, whether it's an iPhone or an Android or whatever it is that you use to listen to podcasts. Make sure that you subscribe to the show so you don't miss a single episode, because there are some really, really good stuff coming your way. With that said, I don't want to keep our guests waiting any longer. I'm super pumped to have him on, like I said before. Without further ado, let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What is up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is the creator of the web show Top Decking, the previous host of Mad Magic, and the creator and host of the Masters of Modern podcast. He's a founding member of the website Collected.company and is the president and game and toy designer of the Kesco Toy and Game Company. Coming to us from Santa Monica, California, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Alex Kessler. Alex, how are you doing today?
Good. That sounds way more impressive when you list it all out all at once.
Hey, man, are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
I mean, my graveyard's pretty full right now, so I can definitely use some of that to pay for that delve spell that apparently we're going to go about doing right now.
So all you prodigies out there, the best way to connect with Alex is on Twitter. He's very active. He's at Kess Wiley. You can look him up there, find him, connect, ask him questions, see what he has going on, which is a lot of really good stuff. So again, at Kess Wiley on Twitter. You can find him there, and that's the best place to connect. So, Alex, we love to learn a little bit about our guests before we dive into all the Magic stuff. First of all, you are from the Santa Monica, California area, but you are traveling right now. Is that right?
Yes. So, technically, I'm in Atlanta, and then I'll be driving to Mississippi this evening. So, it's going to be a fun traveling through the back roads of Alabama. It's going to be fun.
Just a little holiday traveling?
Yeah, my girlfriend is from Mississippi originally, and she actually currently is working in Atlanta, so I'm here for her birthday, and then we're driving out to her parents' place.
Excellent, excellent. That's fun. I am as well traveling, so we are both not at our normal setup, which is kind of funny because we're both podcasters, and we make it work. So here we are on the road, and we're both making it work. That's pretty cool. So
I apologize if the sound doesn't sound good to everyone else.
Oh, hey, it's all right. It's all right. I'm in the same boat. So first of all, a couple things from the intro. What was or is the web show Top Decking?
So after college, my original career path goal was to do kind of film and television, design, creation, production, etc. And at the same time, I got, you know, that's when I like got really back into Magic, and I realized, oh, you know, the League was popular then and a few other things, and me and a business partner named Craig Blanchett, who's on the Command Zone pretty regularly, decided we wanted to make Magic cool again. We figured the best into that is a show about the people that play Magic. So instead of there was a lot of content about playing Magic itself, and we wanted to do something more about kind of the people in that community. And so we created Top Decking, which is kind of a Scrubs meets the League meets Magic the Gathering version of the show. We had two seasons. We did pretty good. I think we have on our personal website, Web Episodes Network, we had about 1 million views. And then our YouTube channel currently has about 1 million as well. So we got around 2 million views for the web series. People liked it, apparently. We still on our YouTube channel, because right now we're releasing the podcast videos on the same YouTube channel, and we still get "When season 3 going to happen" comments pretty much every week. So that was kind of our first foray. Part of it was also, I'm decent at Magic, but I'm never going to be a Pro Tour winning champion. And based on impulse and just, you know, work life and everything else. So, but I realized that one way I could contribute to this community and in a way that can make a name for myself, and it is with content creation. So that's kind of the path that I went after.
Excellent. Excellent. That's pretty cool. So the top decking is more about the people of Magic, which I think is really cool. That's definitely a space that needs to be filled, because like you said, there's plenty of stuff out there about how to play the game. So
I was going to say, you know, a lot of content out there is created by pro Magic players, and there's kind of this weird, nice niche of content created for the casual player, or just the regular player who wants to just kind of experience what Magic is for them and top decking. You can still watch it. It's on youtube.com/topdeckingTV, which is also where the podcast is. Subtle plug. And yeah, there, you know, 20 episodes, 24 episodes, something like that.
Love it. Absolutely love it. That's great. Now tell us a little bit about what is Mad Magic.
So Mad Magic was a show we created in the off season of top decking, where it's, apparently, I talked a lot about Magic Finance at one point in my life, and our production crew decided to start filming me doing it. So it was our kind of take on the Mad Money that's kind of the show out there. But it's me in front of people, or in front of a screen, kind of giving picks and tips on Magic Finance and what cards you should be picking up at that point in time. Apparently, I had really good success. I haven't actually gone back and watched, but everyone's like, oh, yeah, you were like right 80 to 85% of the time on every card, and like anyone who listened to it would have probably made some money. So I was like, at least I did that. People keep wanting to bring it back, and depending on my schedule and my time, it might happen one day, but it's definitely a little bit more of an endeavor, because you need a crane to get the cool camera movements we were pulling off.
Nice. And then we'll dive into more of the Masters of Modern, obviously, because that is your current project. So tell us about Collected.company. I've never heard of that. Which one? What's that?
So when we created the Masters of Modern podcast, we teamed up as kind of the more competitive version of the Command Zone, which is the Commander-focused podcast that was on RocketJump.com. So Jimmy Wong and Josh Lee Kwai started that podcast about 2 years ago with kind of the intent of making Commander content. And I came to them because I'm friends with both of them. And I was like, hey, you know, I have all this equipment from top decking. I still want to make top decking. And now that top decking is kind of finished filming, I'd love to do a more competitive, modern focused podcast, because that's a niche that didn't really exist at that time. And they were like, sure, let's kind of get it started. And we started on RocketJump.com. Rocket Jump, if people don't know who Rocket Jump is, it's kind of the brainchild of Freddie Wong, who is Jimmy's older brother, who's one of the most subscribed YouTube channel creators of all time. And his company, which is Rocket Jump, has started moving more towards production. So they have an anthology sci-fi show that's coming out on Hulu this year or next year. They did a kind of a reality sketch show on Hulu last year, and they're working with, I think it's Lionsgate, to kind of create new content. So since their website is no longer doing digital content, and specifically they've kind of stopped doing podcast content, us and the Command Zone decided that maybe it was time to create a new Magic-focused home for the podcast. So Collected Company was founded about a month ago, kind of with the express purpose of being a new kind of place that people can go find Magic content. And it's starting with both the Command Zone and Masters of Modern podcast.
That is really neat. Okay, that's really cool. And I love how you got the dot company. So it's just Collected.company. I think that's really, really clever, really cool.
I'm a really big fan of using the creative, like instead of .com, the toy company I founded, I've been working on starting this last year, is Kess.co is our website. And the company is called Kessco. So like you getting to play with where that dot goes and kind of, it's like puns within website URLs.
Yeah, I think that's clever too. I think that's really neat. And so you make toys and games, and I've been down to your little office there in Santa Monica, and you have stuff all over the wall that you've designed and created and moved on out. So why do you do a toy company? What's up with that?
I mean, it kind of is the reason I got into Magic too. But so my family's been in the toy industry my entire life, and 4 years before that. My grandfather was an industrial belt plastics factory manufacturer who had, I don't know, I think it's like 2,000 different patents to his name. And you know, he was the original manufacturer and had actually the original patent on the hula hoop. My father then kind of took that family history and repackaged it and relaunched it in the late 80s, when around the year I was born, and have one of the more successful spring summer toy companies of the last 30 years. He sold his company 5 years ago to a company, Jack Specific. And that was kind of when I realized I wanted to do game design. So I was still in production, and that was around Top Decking, when Top Decking was happening. And I realized that I actually don't love film production as much as I love storytelling. The actual act of being on set and kind of going through that process was not something I had the best patience for, because it's a lot of repetition. So when he sold the Jacks, because I would never work for my dad because we would kill each other, I decided to join Jacks, and with the intent of learning the industry so I could eventually maybe start my own game design company, because I started doing a little bit casual game design just as a hobby at that point. And then this last December, I decided to leave and start Kesco, which is my own toy and game company. So we're doing a little bit of spring summer stuff, because that's what my family is known for, and that's my best foot in the door with a lot of places. And then also we launched a game line of 5 different games that range everything from a dancing party game to a drafting game that is themed around like 1960s housewives fighting off zombies attacking their house. And then we're even partnering with Brian David Marshall, Magic Pro Tour historian, to help take his emergent game that he kickstarted last year to kind of a larger retail base.
Excellent. Wow, that's so neat. A lot of really fun stuff going on and within the gaming realm, and then diving deep in Magic. So that's totally awesome. So I totally respect your contributions and just love what you're doing out there. That's super sweet. On the Magic side of things, we love using stories to kind of learn more about our guests and bridge the gap between where we are and where you are. And so the first story that we would love to hear is your origin story. So take us back to the day of the very first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards, and tell us that story.
So, I mean, it's a good segue, because I've actually kind of been aware of Magic since it came out, but in a weird way that other people, I guess, wouldn't really be as familiar with. So because my dad was in the toy industry, every year there's a thing called New York Toy Fair. And now it's in Javits Center. It's a big convention. But what it used to be is just they'd have these two office buildings on Fifth Avenue in New York, and every kind of, you know, toy company would have their own little office that, you know, buyers would come in and kind of sell and go there. And my dad, it would be kind of like our big family reunion. And then we, like, my cousins would come, and then he would take us to each of the different toy companies, and we get to walk around and see all the cool new toys that would be coming out next year. One of these toy companies was Wizards of the Coast.
Wow.
So it wasn't during the alpha beta, because they weren't in that stage. So it was right around, I would say, fifth edition. Is when they started actually showing in these toy fair booths. I might be wrong on that, but that's my memory as a 7-year-old. And my dad definitely brought me packs. He was like, oh, this is a thing that's really popular. Do you want this? And I had nothing to do with it. But he basically created a small collection for me that then, when I kind of hit the fourth grade and the fifth graders started playing Magic the Gathering and around Portal coming out, I started actually picking it up. So that's kind of when I started playing. That had a whole lot of limitations. I'm a prime example of why Portal wasn't a great way to teach people how to play Magic, because I refused to play with library cards, or cards that referenced the library, because in Portal it was called a deck. So I didn't know what a library was or a graveyard or any of these things, because the terminology was different. So it put me in this weird warp space. But that's where I got into Magic. Then, you know, played for about 3 years, and then it got banned because enough older kids were taking advantage of younger kids in the trading in school. So that's when I kind of got forced into a break. And then after college, 10 years later, is kind of when I started getting really back into it. I was at a friend's house, and I think he was moving out of his parents' house, and he had like his old Game Boy that had like the original Pokemon Red in it. His copy, and I started playing. He was like, oh, this, I forgot how great this game was just from a game, because all the like hype around it kind of turned it into a different direction. And then my other buddy who was there was like, I don't know, Magic was what we needed to be about. And then so we literally went to the local comic book store, bought, I think it was the Teneb starter deck, and then the red blue Teneb starter deck from Time Spiral, and then the red blue Noggles themed deck from Lorwyn block, or maybe it was Shadowmoor block, or that era. And then like 6-pack just for lands, and then you know, 12 packs of a bunch of random sets from that around that time, and then just drafted against each other for like 6 hours the exact same card pool, and then I was like, I was hooked. And then I immediately went and bought a box of Shards of Alara block, and haven't, you know, stopped playing Magic since.
Love it. That's awesome. So the first set you ever knew or came in on was fifth edition back there at that toy fair?
I had a starter deck from 5th edition. I had a few Weatherlight and Mirage packs, and then I had a ton of Tempest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was like, I had a lot of, and Stronghold, I had a Spike deck at one point. Yeah, that whole era of Magic.
Man, that's so cool. Absolutely love it. What's been your favorite set?
Of all time? I'm really preferential to original Innistrad. It's definitely thematically on board. I love all the little in references in the set. I think the draft environment was one of the best. I think obviously Snapcaster Mage and Liliana of the Veil and its contribution to the formats I care about now, being modern, was obviously significant. Yeah, I think if I would have had to pick off the top of my head without being prepared for that question, Innistrad is my safe go-to.
Right on. And along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards?
Favorite cards? According to the Masters of Modern podcast, it's Geist of St. Traft. the official line. I have a commander deck that is a foiled out Geist of St. Traft EDH deck. I have never not had a blue-white control deck that at least had one Geist in the sideboard on me in my deck collection. So yeah, I think that's definitely an easy choice.
Excellent. So for those of us who don't know, what is it? What does it do? And why do you like it?
So Geist is a hexproof 2/2. I think it's a cleric. I actually don't know. It's a spirit for sure. I forget what its other creature type is. And when it attacks, it makes a 4/4 angel token tapped and attacking, and then at the end of combat, exile that token. It's just a really easy to defend threat that gets in for a lot of damage very quickly. In most cases, it's because it's a threat that allows me to play this threat out, and then it's going to do its job. It's going to eventually get in for damage, and my opponent needs to worry about it, but I don't have to worry too hard about getting another threat on the table and can kind of just do my game plan on the side. In Commander, it allows me to just always have a creature available that's going to be really hard for anyone to get rid of, so I don't have to worry about kind of producing threats, and I can do more to help kind of control the board and make it so other people don't do extreme things so that my little Geist of St. Traft can get in. And also the fact that the Angel can go after someone else allows it to kind of play a little bit of Planeswalker control, or you know, getting someone just kind of sniping some damage in here or there while I'm focusing on one person with Commander damage.
Nice. That's really cool. I like that a lot. That's really neat. So we got to hear a little bit about your up-and-comings in Magic and some of your favorites. And, I mean, you've been involved in varying degrees with different sets and different formats and obviously as a content creator. And we want to know why. Like, what makes Magic fun for you? Why have you stuck around? Why do you keep playing? Why did you decide to, you know, become a content creator? So what makes Magic fun for you?
I think the content creation is kind of the key to it. And when I say that, I mean the original reason that I got into Magic, and when I was a kid, I used to love video games that kind of also let you do a little bit of this, but I love creating things in the game and then testing it against things. The original reason I even got into competitive Magic is I would brew decks. I love brewing. I love coming up with new kind of cool decks. Different from my co-host on my podcast, he kind of looks for off-the-wall kind of combos, where I generally am a little bit more on the side of good stuff. But beyond that, just having a creation of mine and then seeing it actually function and seeing it take something on and being able to put it through an actual ringer was always something that was very fascinating to me. You know, I loved RPG Maker on PS1 back in the day. I loved the Tony Hawk Pro Skater map creator when they came out, I think the third one. I loved the Halo map creator. So all those things were kind of ways you can kind of create something. And Magic is about that. Like, those were kind of tangential third-party activity versions of those games that really wasn't the purpose of what the game was about. But if you took it to Magic, you know, the point of Magic is to create something and then see how well you can do with it. That's really what jumped me onto it. And then beyond that, you know, the story is great. I love the community in Magic. I love that it's kind of a ragtag group of misfits that all kind of found their way into this community in different ways. And I do think, you know, inherently Magic is the best game that's ever been made. And one game is also kind of, you know, not necessarily the most honest way of putting it, because in reality, Magic is a set of pieces, but there is hundreds of different versions of the game. There's Commander, there's Modern, there's Draft, there's Sealed, there's Cube, there's Plane Chase is about to come out with, you know, the anthology. There's so many different ways to interact with these pieces, and that's just getting, you know, that doesn't even get into like the ridiculous stuff of like Pack Wars and Type 4. Like, it just goes on and on, and people create new ways to kind of play with the game every day as it is. So I love how versatile this game is, and the ability allows kind of the people to create an environment that also lets them to compete.
Yeah, it definitely provides a outlet for, you know, all those creative types, like you were saying, because it is all about taking these pieces that Wizards prints and then creating something and then, Yeah, and that's one thing that I love about the game too, is I love that, you know, it starts before we even sit down. You know, like, it starts when I choose my pieces, you choose your pieces, and then we sit down and, you know, battle it out. And so that's one of the things that I think is really cool and unique and just a lot of fun. So that's really neat. What was an aspect of Magic that you were terrible at when, let's say when you came back, you know, when you started getting into it pretty heavily, but that you eventually overcame?
The attack step.
All right. So how did you overcome that?
I overcome it by playing decks that don't like attacking. I'm a little bit too passive. I don't, you know, one of the ways I got better was a little bit actually Hearthstone, where being able to just grind those games where they're all so much more about kind of just always attacking, and that's kind of how you remove creatures in your way, kind of helped a little bit. But in reality, just practice and getting more comfortable and realizing that taking risks is something that's worth doing. But even now, I'm not great at it. So I play decks that I attack when I know it's safe to attack, and my job is to make sure it's safe.
Nice. Very nice. So was there a time or a period of time that you feel like you improved as a Magic player? You kind of saw the Matrix and leveled up, as it were?
I think there were two different points. The first was back in Zendikar Block, which is right around when I started playing again. It's like a year into it. And that was kind of when I realized that there's an entire online supply of information in the world to read and learn and figure stuff out. And that's when I learned, you know, that's like right after reading my first draft pick article on Zendikar Block, that's the first time I ever won a draft. And you know, just kind of going into actually learning about the game and doing research was such a huge new world to my playing that really helped me upgrade. The other time I would say was probably most recently, within the last year, is I've been able to just play a lot more recently for a various amount of reasons. And by just kind of playing as much as possible and getting into kind of why these games work the way they do by looking and kind of designing games, I was able to kind of upgrade my game to the next level. So now I've made day two out of GP. I've done a little bit more accomplishments as far as the actual professional gaming side of Magic.
Excellent. So what players, past or present, do you look up to that you've learned from? Some of your Magic mentors, either in person or from afar, like, who do you look up to as a player?
There's definitely a little bit of the, you know, the guys behind it. So there's always the Mark Rosewater side of things. And then there's the Brian Kibler, LSV, Chapin. All three of those are guys that, like, I've been following for a really long time. Just like, basically, they're the first articles I started reading. I still pay for professional Star City Games just to read Chaz Andre's finance article at the beginning of the week and Chapin's article somewhere in the middle. Chapin, all of them have committed so much to kind of content creation that's also kind of where I followed on that side. And then, you know, with Kibler and his whole path into kind of card game design and design in general was another kind of direction that I took inspiration from.
So as you've played Magic, you've played hundreds, if not thousands, of games against, you know, hundreds of different kinds of players and people. What has been the biggest mistake that you see players make? And then how can we avoid that mistake?
I think mana management. and some of this matters in your play group, because if you're in a commander game or you're just casually playing, or even at high levels, there's some forgiveness on this, where you tap the swamp in the island and you needed that swamp for another spell when you could have tapped any other land or two islands because it was a Snapcaster Mage or whatever. The small mistakes, I think, are what really kill a person. Big mistakes happen and it'll because you didn't notice something or you weren't paying attention or you didn't write something down. But, you know, those are harder to kind of iron out and learn from. People make mistakes. But the little stuff, the organizational stuff, that's the kind of stuff that people, I think, really kind of nicks you down into lowering your win percentage.
What can we do to iron those out, like you said?
And this is, I mean, for people who have played against me, it'll be an ironic statement, but keep your lands organized. and the other one is, you know, when you make a plan, stick to it. Something that I always kind of, and one of the reasons I think that my professional Magic career is never really a path, is that I'll often sit, look at, okay, this is exactly what I need to do, this is the plan, and then just not do it for distracted reasons or because I see something else, or like, oh, he attacked, I'm going to block. Oh, wait, I knew I wasn't supposed to block here. So, like, committing to the game plan that you kind of choose and keeping organized with kind of what your PlayStation looks like and making sure you don't just pile all your lands on top of each other or keep your deck in hand organized and clean.
Yes. Oh, man. Several times I had a plan in mind. I'm going to do this, this, and whatever. And then they do something else, and then I'm like, ah, I'll block or cast a spell. And I'm like, no, I literally had a plan and walked through it. And then I just threw it out the window as soon as he played his card. Yeah.
The small opportunity that they presented prevents you from taking advantage of your entire game plan. That small opportunity is a trap.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, man. So we are all on, you know, our journey, and each of our journey in Magic has highs and lows, but the highs and lows are unique to each player. And so we would love to hear first your worst, your lowest of lows. What was your worst Magic moment, and then what did you learn from that experience?
I would say that one of the worst was, and I don't, I mean, I guess it's being paying attention to someone kind of cheating you on the other end is, you know, I was in a game, I think this was back in Innistrad PTQ season. I was playing, if I remember correctly, I was playing a Venser, the Sojourner, the Planeswalker, and the Rhino that I don't remember what it's called that and stops your opponent's attack step. So when it enters the battlefield, your opponent can't attack that turn. And it was during the Bonfire of the Dam miracle phase. And for whatever reason, my opponent miracles Bonfire of the Dam. And for what I count the whatever damage I have available incorrectly, and I'm just like, oh, okay, that's it, you got it. And then, or like, he like basically gives me the win, and then I like for some reason don't count the damage, and then he allows me to scoop in response to his not winning. And that was a like the not paying attention to what he was kind of accomplishing, which in his defense, you know, I like basically, you know, was very blatantly not understanding that I had won the game, and kind of let myself scoop to him. But I would also say always make sure you've lost.
Wow, yeah, that's really interesting. So what did you learn from that? Like, what did you take away?
Always count, do the math. Never assume you understand the math until you actually have done it. Never feel uncomfortable about asking a judge to come over. And something one of the habits I learned very early was ask a judge about anything, because it kind of gets you over that immediate fear of asking a judge about, like, if you see your opponent cheating and you feel scummy because you're like, oh, I don't want to tattletale on this guy. He's a nice dude. Just because he's doing something wrong, that emotion is wrong. Like, he is that opponent or she is screwing you out of the win. So calling a judge is fine with that. But to feel better about that, you know, call a judge on yourself when you do something wrong. Call a judge when you don't understand something, or if you're just, you have any misunderstanding of how a card interaction might work or does work. Call a judge, because worst case scenario, they're going to tell you, no, you're wrong. And then you just continue the game. So that's kind of one of the other things that kind of helps in that situation.
Yeah, that's so true. And I mean, that's definitely something that, well, I know that I don't really have a problem with it. I call a judge all the freaking time. But I know that other people do feel uncomfortable about that. And I second you and don't. Like, they're there to help. Like, they're there to clear things up. You can call them about anything. You can ask questions. And, you know, they're there to make sure that both sides understand, you know, what's going on. So, I was at a PPTQ one time. It was crazy. I had never called the judge so much in my life, but like, it seemed like every single round there was some issue or something, and I'd be the one calling the judge. I'm like, oh man, I'm that guy. But you know what? Like, we cleared things up and we were able to move forward, and I didn't feel bad about it at all. Yeah. Definitely don't let your opponent get away with stuff, especially if you notice it. So prodigies out there, call a judge for sure. So Alex, on the flip side, are our highs or our proud Magic moments? What has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
I wouldn't even say it's not even my best finish anymore, but I think the first time I did decently at a PTQ, I got 13th place. And this is beyond the Magic creation side, because there's probably some pride moments that I'll talk about there, but I got 13th at a PTQ playing a blue. It was like the first modern PTQ was during like Bloodbraid Elf, you know, Jund with both Bloodbraid Elf and the Shaman, Deathrite Shaman, were in the format. And whatever reason, my blue-white deck with Wall of Omens, Restoration Angels was like very well positioned. I think I had 3 Tolaria West, and would just search up Ghost Quarters and Ancient, not Ancient Den. Sorry, I'm forgetting all these cards because I'm bad at Magic, apparently. Academy Ruins to loop. Yeah, and I had like Engineered Explosives. It was sweet. This deck is awesome. I forget how sweet this deck was. Got 13th, and then for like a month later, I was just like, hey, did I tell you? I would just brag about it non-cessantly. Awesome. Eventually, it became more of an in-joke about how I was bragging about the fact that I got 13th at a PTQ. And I think part of it was the fact that that was like actually not that impressive. And then on the content creation side, I think just how positive the response has always been to top decking. I mean, you know, we never got big enough to kind of continue it and make actual money on it. So it was something that kind of existed and pay anyone for it. But the fact that, You know, we got 2 million views on it. The fact that that got our voice out in the community, the fact that people greatly love these characters and greatly love these shows and want more of it is something that's always been something I've been really proud about in the Magic community.
That's such a interesting thing, I feel, within the Magic content creation space is that there are these things that people love. You know, they love top decking, for example, and there's other, you know, content out there that, that people like give high feedback for and whatnot. But I mean, there's only a very small amount of content creators within the Magic space out there who are making enough to do it, you know, full time, for example. And I think it boils down to, like, we're in a space where we're dealing with disposable income, right? And so it's like, if you have the money to play Magic or to learn about, you know, Magic or some other thing, then a lot of people choose to put their money towards buying new cards and playing, which is totally understandable because that's what we love to do. And so it kind of makes it like a tough space to be in as far as content creators go. At least that's my feeling as far as that goes. Because like you said, you have this really successful show, but then it has lots of views and it has a lot of steam to move forward and whatnot, but just doesn't have everything it needs to kind of, you know, keep it being a consistent part of the Magic space.
Right. And part of what top decking is, it was an endeavor. You know, we had a crew, cast of 12 individuals and a crew of another 20. And when you're not paying anyone, that's hard to kind of keep going. One of the reasons that the podcasting is a little bit easier is, you know, it's just me and Ben. So that in mind, and the guests that we have that week and the help of Jimmy and Josh. But the fact that it's just the two of us, it's easy to kind of schedule us around that. It's easy to the time commitment of a podcast and the editing commitment of a podcast is a very different beast than a scripted television show. The other side of that is, you know, for everyone listening, and this will be a subtle plug, but, you know, these content creators are doing it because they love to do it. But, you know, like, they have Patreons. Like, that is a thing that is a great tool that's kind of didn't exist when we were doing top decking even. And the fact that, you know, you can know, like, the way the Professor and TMS Wedge or Wedge from the Mana Source pay their bills is literally through their Patreon donations. But, you know, Jimmy and Josh just launched their Patreon for the Command Zone. They're going to use it. They're, you know, they do all this expansive new content. Our podcast herself has a Patreon that we use to kind of, well, that's how we're doing the new video content that we're doing. That's how we're going to start, you know, releasing new kind of special content as time moves forward. And that's how we're paying for the time that we're kind of spending on this. And it's important to kind of support the content creators you listen to and you love. And you don't have to. And like a dollar here or there is important. But content creation is an endeavor. And it's not as sometimes easy as people assume it is. And supporting the people that are creating this content for you for free is not always the worst thing to do.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I'm with you right there, obviously, being in the same space.
Do you have a Patreon? Is that a plug for that, or are you not on that train yet?
Oh, I do, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. So also the Patreon for this podcast.
So as you've gone on, you know, your journey, and you've done the content creation side, and you've played Magic, and you mentioned making day two of a Grand Prix, which we'll get into, but what has been the deepest thing you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
I think that I'm more competitive than I expected, and I'm a little bit more argumentative than I used to think as I was younger. I was obviously very argumentative when I was younger, but I don't think I realized it until kind of getting into the Magic community. I don't know necessarily. I think it's just, I look at more of a, my ability to learn has gotten much better thanks to Magic. I think my ability to look at situations in creative ways, trying to problem solve my way through situations has generally increased a great deal because of Magic the Gathering.
That's awesome. You've improved your ability to learn. I really like that. That's really neat. Okay, here we go. Within Magic, what are some of your shortcomings and what are you working on as a player?
One of my shortcomings is I generally don't play the deck. I am very impulsive with my deck choice in major tournaments. I think one of the reasons my better performances sometimes come in sealed or draft is just because in those formats, I don't have that much of a choice of what's in front of me. for instance, I think the first Modern GP I ever played in, I was playing a Jeskai Red deck that was like a stock list, was doing really well. And then I played against someone who had a 4/4 with cumulative upkeep, exile two cards from your opponent or from a graveyard. And I was like, oh man, that card's amazing. It's like white Tarmogoyf. And then put two in my main deck like an idiot the night before the GP. and then proceeded to not win a match, drawing those significantly and never having enough cards in my graveyard to make them worth it. So I would say one of my just kind of learning the deck I should play and sticking to it. And I think that's one of the things I need to get better at is just kind of being, and this goes back to the problem we discussed before of just the impulsivity of I have this game plan. I'm going to make this game plan happen. oh, he attacked him. Just chump block this creature. Oh, he pumped his creature. Oh, my whole game plan's ruined. Not chump blocking his creature. That's obviously a punt. That I think just impulsivity is something I should be working on.
Yep. Now, as a content creator in the Masters of Modern space, what are some of your shortcomings there? What are you working on as a content creator?
I would say marketing would be my main complaint on how our podcast runs. You know, we're good at getting our content out there, but both me and Ben are very busy in our other lives, and doing all the small stuff that really makes a difference, like annotating the YouTube videos, linking the YouTube videos to the last week's podcast, sharing it out on every social media platform, making sure we post our video, you know, our podcast, not only to Collected Company and YouTube, but also to like MTGcast.com. You know, all these little subtle kind of follow up parts of kind of the marketing side of building it is, I think, one of and you know, something we're going to plan on doing with the Patreon money, and something we're, you know, that's one of the reasons we started our Patreon, is to take kind of our shortfallings, like getting YouTube videos onto YouTube, because that's an important thing to do if you're doing content like this. You know, now that we have a Patreon, we're able to play Mike Clary, who's our YouTube editor, to kind of produce our videos and get them on YouTube. Like, all these little steps are really kind of the next step of getting forward, and being able to allocate the resources to that is something that is a challenge.
And if you could go back in time, let's say 5 years, and knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself?
Buy Fetchlands. I guess there's probably cards out there that have a higher value spike. I guess Amulet of Vigors, just buy infinite Amulet of Vigors. I think they're like 3 cents at one point, and now, you know, now they're down because Titan Bloom is a thing, but, or like, look for those cards. I guess in reality, you know, when we did Top Decking and when we did Webisodes Network, which was kind of the platform that Top Decking was on, we focused a little too heavily on trying to make Webisodes Network work, trying to do a off YouTube video platform to kind of be a Hulu for web series. When we really, and what we were good at and what we should have really focused on was just content creation. We should have been making more Magic content. We should have been making other kind of TV shows, really kind of forcing our way to kind of get through that, because I think that's where our strength was, and realizing what our strength was and doing our best job at kind of accomplishing it, I think, was our biggest mistake.
And diving into, you mentioned that you made day two of Grand Prix. What format was that?
That was GP Atlanta, and it was it was the first Kaladesh limited GP. It was like right after the release. I literally didn't go to the pre-release. I've sadly missed two pre-releases this year, and it was the first two pre-releases I missed in Zendikar, both Eldritch Moon and Kaladesh, and then played one pre-release Moto sealed event on Moto the night before. I didn't even finish it. I played like three of the league games, and then just showed up and then spiked into day two.
Wow. I was going to ask, what did the preparation look like? And it sounds like it was pretty slim.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so personal life wise, my girlfriend got a job at AT&T this year and has actually been living in Atlanta for the year, and I'm living in LA. But because of that, I've had a little bit more time to play Magic. So I think just the ability to play way more Magic over the last year and play a lot of, you know, Conspiracy Limited, Eldritch Moon Limited, Eternal Masters Limited, Shadows Over Innistrad Limited, plus playing just a ton of Commander, a ton of Modern, a ton of this made-up format me and Ben play called Highlander Roulette. Just my Magic play ability was up to snuff, and then just doing some research beforehand to figure out what the cards do and what traps there are to not fall into helped.
So what would you say is your best format? Is it sealed or is it modern?
Modern.
Modern, for sure.
I would say it's modern and maybe a little bit commander. I think those are the two formats I play the most.
So what is an underplayed card in modern? One that doesn't get enough respect. And I'm not going to hold your feet to the fire a year from now and be like, oh, this card sucks, and you said it was going to be good. But no, I just want to know, what do you think? Just something that doesn't get enough respect.
I think I have two cards on this list. First is Geist of Sandtraft, because if I answered anything beyond that, I would be disingenuous. But I think actually Gideon, Jura, the original Gideon, is heavily underplayed. I think that card is still insane. It is a 5-drop, so that's a limitation. But I think if your deck can handle dropping that card down, it's very hard for your opponent to beat you with that card in play.
Good old Gideon Jura and Geist of Sandtraft. Now, do you have any daily rituals that you feel leads to your success? And they don't have to be Magic related, but are there any non-negotiables that you do every day?
Check my email. Actually, I guess I do drink. I drink a Trenta iced coffee every single day from Starbucks. I read an article a while back that basically they did a 20-year study on coffee and whether it's good or bad for you. And they found that it's extraordinarily good for you. excluding all of the sugar and other stuff that you can put into a coffee, like straight coffee. And basically the recommendation, and obviously studies say different things, but their recommendation was if you drink coffee, drink more of it. If you don't drink coffee, start. And it had a lot to do with Alzheimer's research. So like the stimulant in coffee does a lot to help brain cells kind of continue functioning in a way that other kind of things don't do. And so yeah, I started drinking tons of coffees every day.
Interesting, very interesting. And was that research funded by Starbucks?
I think it started before Starbucks was around.
Okay.
It was like over a 20 to 30 year period kind of study. So that's the one reason I gave it a little credit, because it was so long. But yeah, it definitely was probably funded by some Starbucks lobbyists.
So where can we find you in the future, Alex? What events are you going to be at, if any? What projects do you have coming up that we can check out? Where can we find you?
I'm not positive on events. I haven't really looked at the GP schedule. I will be at the GP Vegas event, the big one that's happening this year. That's the 3-day, 3 different format event happening. I think, you know, me and Ben talked really heavily about that. We thought the modern Pro Tours was a problem, but we think there should be some type of big modern super convention, and what GP Vegas is looking to shape up to seems to be what that's going to be. So that's really exciting. Obviously, you can find me on collected.company or the YouTube channel, youtube.com/topdeckingTV for the podcast. And we're on iTunes and everywhere else a podcast, I think, is found. So that's an easy way to find me. I'm around. Twitter is also available. I'll argue with anyone over any card, specifically Blood Moon. I think, you know, I'm in LA, so if you're in the Los Angeles region ever, and I always go to Comic Cons, I'm going to be at New York Toy Fair. I don't think it's open to the public necessarily, but I'll be there. Gen Con, you know, those are kind of the big like conventions I'll definitely be showing up at. And then just any GP on the West Coast is a likely chance of me showing up.
Excellent. Once again, Prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Alex, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at Kes Wiley, like you just mentioned. He's very active. You always see him posting about, you know, different things as well as their content. So be sure to connect with him there for sure.
And make sure follow the podcast at the MMCast, especially if you just want magic content, follow at the MMCast.
That's true. Yeah. So if you're into modern, that's your thing. You want to check out Master Modern, then yeah, it's at the MMCast on Twitter. And then if you want Alex's, you know, rantings, then follow him at Kes Wiley. So I've learned a lot. I've loved diving into your story and learning about, you know, the content creation side and getting a little bit of insight into your thoughts on magic and, you know, how to play it, how to get better, stuff like that. What is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something that you've already said you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end?
I think the judge comment. I think, you know, the best thing to always do is ask for help. When I was a kid in school, that's every teacher loved me because I would ask questions. And I think in magic, if you have any question of what's going on or any idea that something shady might be happening, ask a judge. They're there to help. And I would even say if you think you did something wrong, ask a judge just to help kind of balance the karma side of that equation.
Alex, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse, which are many. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our chat with Alex Kessler today. It was so fun having another podcaster on the show. I think it's so funny that we both are podcasters, and yet we were both not in our normal habitat for this interview. So he was traveling, I was traveling. Ironically, we're both in California, even though I just moved a few weeks ago. But we were both here in the South. I'm in Tennessee with my in-laws, and he was in Atlanta, so Georgia, just a couple hours south of me, visiting his girlfriend's family. So I think that is so funny. In the post-interview chat, Alex and I were talking, and he mentioned something that was really good. I wish I would have hit the record button again and grabbed it from him. But when we were talking about the last guidance, the last bit of advice that he had to share with us, in addition to what he said, he brought up a really good point, which is if you have an idea, just go for it. You know, commit to it, make sure you're consistent, and just do it. Whether that's committing to being a competitive Magic player, being consistent in your practice, being consistent in your attendance of Friday Night Magic, Grand Prix, the travel commitment, whatever it takes to make it happen. Or whether it's creating something, a podcast, a company. Alex has his toy company and the podcast and the video projects that he's done. These different endeavors that he has committed to throughout his life. He really wanted to pass on the advice of when you have an idea, commit to it. and give it your all so that you can look back and instead of saying, oh, I wish I would have tried, you can say, I did my best and I had a blast and it was a good run, you know? So he definitely wanted to pass that on. And like I said, I wish I could have hit the record button and get that from him, but we were in the post-interview chat and he brought that up and I definitely wanted to share that with you. So if you haven't yet, and if modern is your thing, definitely check out the Masters of Modern podcast for sure. And then you can connect with Alex on Twitter. Mostly, he's very active, like we mentioned in the show. You can find him on his personal account or the MMCast account. And before we wind down for the week, I want to give another huge thank you to the patrons. I will be doing the drawing for November next week and announcing the winner here, so stay tuned for that. And if you want to be considered for the next drawings, go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon. As always, I love doing this and I look forward to connecting with you more, whether that's on Twitter or the Facebook group or via email. Stay in touch. We have a new set on our horizon, which means spoilers will be starting soon, which always forms a fun, energetic buzz in the community, and I look forward to sharing that experience with you. So stay tuned. As always, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.